From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In a gift to the oil and gas industry, Donald Trump's administration on Thursday announced it would lift an Obama administration ban on offshore drilling. The announcement means that coastal waters all around the U.S. could be leased for oil exploration, rolling back hard-won victories by the environmental movement. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke hailed the decision as, quote, a new path for energy dominance in America. But his department's positioning is at odds with governors from many states, including Republicans, who oppose offshore drilling. Meanwhile, offering yet more evidence that climate chaos from an excess of greenhouse gases and the burning of fossil fuels is the so-called bomb cyclone that has slammed into parts of the eastern coast of the U.S. From Florida to Massachusetts, communities experienced record-breaking weather patterns. My guest is Antonia Yuhas. She is a leading energy analyst, author, and investigative journalist. She is an award-winning writer who has contributed to Newsweek, Rolling Stone, Harper's Magazine, The Atlantic, CNN.com, The Nation, Ms., The Advocate, and more. She's the author of three books, Black Tide, The Tyranny of Oil, and The Bush Agenda. Welcome to the program, Antonia.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So first, can you explain what it was that the ban that the Obama administration put in place actually entailed, and what does the overturning of this ban really mean in practical terms?
Well, there's a couple different things happening. The most important is that what happened last week is that the Trump administration's Interior Department introduced its proposal for its new five-year offshore drilling plan. And that's every administration does that. It sets out a five-year agenda for offshore drilling. And this was the Trump administration's proposal for what would be its plan for its five-year plan. And that sounds complicated, but basically the most important piece of that is that this isn't set in stone yet. It was the Interior Department presenting what its proposal would be for its five-year plan. And they're also calling this a rough draft of its proposal for its five-year plan. And that means that the public still has the opportunity to respond to this and that it's not set in stone. So that's the important precursor to what happened. What happened was that the Trump administration put forward a five-year offshore drilling plan, which completely reverses what the Obama administration had done. The Obama administration, while still expanding offshore drilling, had put about 96% of our coastal waters out of bounds for drilling, while the Trump administration has proposed to put 90% of our offshore waters up for sale in proposed leases taking place over the next 5 years. That includes proposals off of the Northern California coast, the Central California coast, the Southern California coast, Oregon and Washington, off the Atlantic coast, almost the entire Arctic, and increased drilling off the Gulf of Mexico. So this is a massive proposed expansion of offshore oil and gas drilling to basically every corner of water across the United States.
That's all.
That's all. Yeah, it's huge.
So when we say offshore drilling, we're basically talking about companies that are involved in exploration to try to find reserves under the ocean floor?
It's everything. It basically means you buy a lease and then the first thing you do is explore.
Right.
The next thing you do is prepare it. The next thing you do is drill it. The next thing you do is ship it to shore. So that means an entire set of infrastructure that needs to be put in place as well. So just for those of us in California, first of all, the only place that drilling occurs right now off the coast of California is in Southern California, mostly off of Santa Barbara, which is an area that was grandfathered in. We had this huge offshore drilling spill in 1969. It was in the largest in U.S. history. In response to it, a massive movement was born in California that then spread across the country, banning offshore drilling here and in many parts of the country, but grandfathering in those rigs that were already in place. And so that's still happening in Southern California. Those companies have also, by the way, played a lot of games with the limitations that had been put on them, and have been doing a lot of horizontal drilling, fracking, basically taking the bounds that had been put on them that were grandfathered, and then stretching out their drilling to reach many, many more areas than they should have been. But essentially, we've banned offshore drilling in most of California. This means that there would be lease sales for new drilling across the entire California coast, also up into Oregon and Washington. And that would mean, if it happens, that for a company to explore, produce, drill, not only do they set up offshore platforms, but they have to get the product to and from shore. So that also means pipelines stretching to and from the rigs. It means storage terminals on the coast. It means pipelines or trains or trucks moving that product along the coast or into the nation. So it would mean not only offshore drilling and all the potential costs associated with that, but all of the infrastructure that would need to be built to sustain it as well.
And of course, any infrastructure that is built is extremely vulnerable to breaks, like what happened in Santa Barbara, like what we've seen happening in so many different places. And of course, we know that rigs can have accidents and explode, like the Deepwater Horizon explosion. We've seen spills in pipeline after pipeline that's onshore. And so all of these make people vulnerable to the direct short-term consequences of oil infrastructure, and then imperils the entire planet to the long-term consequences of burning oil and gas.
Yeah, of course. So what this plan is a part of is where U.S. energy policy had for many decades been built on a plan of U.S. energy independence, producing the oil and natural gas that we consume. It was the theory. The Trump administration has shifted that from energy independence to energy dominance, meaning we would move the United States to be the dominant energy player in the world. And this is part of a theory that is one of the main theories put forward by two of the Trump administration's key energy advisors, one of whom is Kathleen Hartnett White, who's being considered for the head of the Council on Environmental Quality at the White House, which is that fossil fuels would be seen as an element of U.S. power that is driven by essentially white men taking fossil fuels to be the way that the United States becomes this white male-led dominating force. And in a book that Kathleen Hartnett White helped write, she talks about the series of white men throughout U.S. history who have led fossil fuel dominance, and how fossil fuels will be the master resource, not, you know, particularly ironically referencing the master race, and how Donald Trump would be the next person to carry the master resource forward, guiding the U.S. into this dominant position and taking over Saudi Arabia as the world's dominant oil player. This is their vision. And this is a vision that Interior Secretary Zinke is moving forward with his proposal that is about U.S. energy dominance being led by extracting every ounce of oil and natural gas and coal, for that matter, that the United States has. And so this follows perfectly along with those theories that they put forward into practice, and saying basically, if we've got any oil and natural gas off the waters of the United States, then we should be exploring for and extracting it. And that's what this plan would put into practice. Only, as I said, at most about 10% of U.S. continental waters would not be open to offshore drilling under this plan. And that's areas off of Hawaii and a small area of the Arctic. Otherwise, everything else is open for grabs.
Wow. Now, is it possible that the demands of tourist coastal tourist industries might stave off some of the zeal to drill everywhere. Governor Rick Scott of Florida, a Republican, is one of the people most upset about this plan to open offshore drilling everywhere. He has vowed to protect his coastline and protect the natural resources. He used that term, natural resources, of his coastline.
As has Marco Rubio. I mean, the Florida delegation is furious about this, and that's because Florida had a very special carve out protecting the east coast of Florida from drilling, and that's been in place for decades, and it's basically the only existing moratorium that had been put in place after 1969 that had stayed in place was Florida, and the Trump administration took that off the table as well. I mean, basically, the governors of almost every coastal state, the delegations of almost every coastal state, except for Alaska, are up in arms about this proposal. People are particularly off the Pacific coast, off the Atlantic coast. So the idea that there would be drilling off the Atlantic coast, as you did in your introduction, you talked about the bomb cyclone. We're in the midst of this, you know, massive, unparalleled weather attack on the East Coast, barreling through the coast, freezing waters, freezing the air, bringing enormous amounts of destruction to the East Coast. Imagine if there were oil rigs out there. Imagine if there were pipelines out there, oil terminals. And think about Hurricane Harvey, which we did just have, and several of those Gulf hurricanes that were unprecedented and came barreling through the heart of oil infrastructure that did cause enormous amounts of damage to that infrastructure. Offshore, onshore as well, including refineries. Imagine that type of infrastructure existing, not just in the Gulf Coast, where it's already obviously very problematic, but in the Atlantic, in the Pacific, expanded in the Gulf, in the Arctic. So people, the delegations of those coasts, you know, basically don't want that either. And so this is, you know, definitely an area where the Trump administration has gone well beyond what most, and not all, though, Republicans who are the head of Gulf states would want to have seen. And at the same time that this is moving forward by the Trump administration, the Trump administration has proposed removal of protections that were put in place, increased safety measures that had been adopted by the Obama administration to address, after years of study, of what caused the BP Gulf oil disaster. New safety measures had been put in place, and the Trump administration wants to eliminate those. And it wants to eliminate those because it says it will save the oil industry money. The amount of money it would save the oil industry, according to the Trump administration, is $23 million a year for the entire industry. And ExxonMobil alone, just in the last 4 months of last year, had $4 billion in earnings.
Wow.
So we're going to have riskier drilling in more places so that the oil companies can make more money and save what is to them nothing. You know, it's really just a series of potential extreme hazards. And I would have to say that this is basically just the Trump administration moving forward. There are areas in which, of course, the administration is doing a tremendously good job on behalf of industry. And there's one industry association that is quoted in the New York Times saying, you know, which is basically their basic position, we're all for more areas of the country being made available to us. And that's, you know, essentially their bottom line. If there's oil and gas there, we want to at least have access to it. And then we'll decide when and if we want to make use of it. So even if, as many analysts have said, look, the price of oil may not even justify right now drilling in these areas, that's not what's of interest to the industry. Someday, in their mind, the price of oil will be higher, and they want to have access.
They want control. They want the freedom to go where they wish and, you know, be able to have that sort of financial freedom as well. I mean, so you're saying the cost issue won't be prohibitive necessarily because it is expensive to explore offshore drilling. I mean, sure, there must be some sort of geological surveys that point to where the oil reserves are most likely to lie, but the cost of the lease, if the government actually charges enough, and the cost of exploration, I mean, you would think they would be prohibitive for an industry so impactful and invasive and extractive as the fossil fuel industry, but that's not necessarily true.
The cost of the lease certainly wouldn't be prohibitive if history is any guide.
Right.
Basically,
we've
the issue
practically
is,
given away the land.
Yeah, we tend to do that. There is money to be made there. I wouldn't argue with that. The federal government would get money. The question is if the risks and potential costs are enough to, you know, say that that's a good deal for us. We certainly would get money. We do get money from these, and it's wrong to say that we don't. But the costs are obviously an enormous piece of the puzzle here. In terms of the companies, right now they are facing lower oil costs. So at this moment, I don't think they'd immediately jump out there. I mean, in fact, I know they wouldn't, and just start exploring and producing. They do, however, want to have the ability to do that when the price of oil goes back up, and they are, you know, quite certain from their perspective that it will. And that they want to have the ability to make use of these resources when they want to. And so that's where, you know, public policy makes decisions that are either we're going to say, here, it's available to you when you want it, or no, it's not, because the risks are too high associated with the cost. And one of the things that's very clear in all of the research on offshore drilling I have done, the industry is very clear. There's no way to do really drilling of any sort, but offshore drilling in particular, which is incredibly technologically complex, to do it and not expect that there will be accidents, blowouts, explosions. And the best tool that they have for stopping an explosion, which is something called the blowout preventer, only works 50% of the time when it works right, when it works the way it's supposed to work. But for them, the costs are worth the risks. And so they are willing to do that. There's a lot of oil out there. They want to go get it.
They measure it in money, not the environmental impact or the impact to humans and communities.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then the question to us is, do we value those other things more?
Yeah. So finally, Antonia, what can stop this from barreling ahead? Let's talk about what the public can do, either through making themselves heard and also through any sort of lawsuits or kind of legal fight.
Environmental groups are definitely, and states, are gearing up for a legal fight and a public fight. And I think there's, you know, a number of things that people can do to get involved in that. One is, the administration did say that there's going to be a 60-day public comment period on this proposal. That hasn't been how people can get kind of engage in that has not been made public. And also, just with this administration to say, the public comment period on the Utah National Monuments, Bears Ears, and Escalante, where millions of public comments overwhelmingly opposed to them being reduced in size. And the Trump administration said, you know, we don't listen to the public. Zinke specifically said this, basically, and I'm summarizing, public opinion isn't what we make decisions on. And so they went ahead and shrunk Bears Ears and Escalante. So you can engage in that public comment process. It's important to do it, but it certainly shouldn't be the only route. As I said, environmental groups, state leaderships need to hear from the public saying, you know, we support your efforts. We want to participate in your efforts in saying that this is not something that we want to see happen. And I think, you know, the many different groups and policymakers who are going to be gearing up, the list is many of both policymakers and environmental organizations.
Well, we'll certainly watch the story and see how it plays out. Antonia, thank you for all the work you do and for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Antonia Juhas is a leading energy analyst, author, investigative journalist. She has contributed to Newsweek, Rolling Stone, Harper's Magazine, The Atlantic, and many other publications. She's written a number of books, including Black Tide and The Tyranny of Oil. We've been discussing the Trump administration's decision to end the Obama administration's offshore drilling ban. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.